Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show. Off for another day of broadcast insolence. And I have survived. I am alive.
Very strong.
Yeah. Wow. That was a good 48 hours, or 36 hours. What is 12? What is 24 plus 12? 36 hours.
Confirmed 36.
Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun. All right. Let's get right to it, because the gory details of what actually happened to me would just be too freaky to discuss on the radio. Because it's, let's just put it this way, the Centers for Disease Control is right now going through my house with swabs and other kinds of technical equipment. They showed up in those 12 monkey suits. You know, you see that, you know, it's just the all hazmat suit with the light on the top. I don't know what they're going to find, but oh, I swear to God, I hope nobody else gets it. All right, we have got coming up on the program, Joe Donlan's going to join us. He's really an upgrade to Ben Bradley. I think we can all agree on that. The scooter pilot program, as you just heard Anna talking about, is coming back. I have thoughts. Oh, I have thoughts. I do not understand for one moment why they think this is a good idea. This is not, this whole idea, they try to, you know, this is a problem with Chicago politicians. Politicians in general. They always try to sell you on some sort of completely benign or social justice-y reason for doing anything that they're going to be doing, right? We need to help poor working mothers on the West Side in their final mile get to the bus that they so desperately need to get to their job to put food in the mouths of their children. That's what the scooter program was sold to us on. Now, that is an incredibly noble concept, isn't it? Sure. Is that what was going on? Did Trevor and Becky, who are racing each other drunkenly down Halsted Street, trying to stay on the right side of Halsted Street so the scooter didn't kick out between Randolph and Madison? Is that the final mile they're talking about? How about the people that were throwing them in the trees in the West Loop? Not that there are that many trees to throw them in the West Loop, yet they found trees and they threw them into them.
I saw teenagers buzzing around the West Loop on those things with their vape pen in their mouth.
Yeah, right. Potentially killing themselves with their vape pen. This is not what is going on. And I gotta also tell you, this single mom in East Garfield Park who's just trying to get, you know, through gang-infested territory to get to her job as a practical nurse somewhere so she can put food on the table for her kids. Not on a scooter. I mean, I don't see it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I understand the need for public transportation, but, you know, there's another way to do this. I'd like to know who, I'd like to finish the sentence first, but let me try this one. Who in the city council got lobbied by whom in the scooter industry? Smart scooter industry. And what trips did they take as a result? That's all I'm asking. This has total wired in Chicago politics written all over it. Because it purports to do one thing, doesn't do it at all, helps a very, very specific group of business owners and in communities that, you know, already are developed. It doesn't incentivize them to develop other places. Because this whole idea, well, it's Garfield Park. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Fewer scooters in the trees in Garfield Park, by the way.
They're not as environmentally friendly? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying that they've got some beautiful trees over there, too. Have you ever been to Garfield, like that whole, the park right there where the park and the square and the whole thing? That is it's physically very beautiful. It's a very tough neighborhood, though. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to go out there on a sightseeing tour with all of your friends.
It wouldn't be a good look for me, Ralph.
From your friends from Winnetka to like, oh, you know what? We should go look at architecture in Garfield Park. Let's, you know what we'll do? We'll get scooters and we'll just go through. It's not going to happen. But the whole point of this is that it's not, stop lying to us. If you want them back, just say that Becca wanted them back. That Trevor and Noah couldn't live without them in the West Loop. And you know what else you should do? You should probably, since White Claw has like some Chicago root issue, right, doesn't it? To somehow develop mm-hmm. through here. There should be White Claw vending machines right next to the scooter stations.
Don't they already have like a claw machine for White Claw somewhere?
Yes. But like, I mean, I don't know, on the street. I'm saying for the summer on the street. So you just put it right, you know, just solar powered White Claw refrigerated dispensary system. That's all I'm saying. And stop trying to tell me that it's for the single working mom on the West Side. Because it's not. She doesn't want White Claw either. Or a scooter. Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather right now. Rokan Show right here. 720 WGN. Sorry for losing my mind a few minutes ago, but that's just what goes on. Joe Donlin understands that from WGN TV News. Every once in a while you see a story, Joe, that just makes you so nuts.
Yeah.
That you can't believe it.
You know, I was thinking you might want to walk some of that back, because you and I are old enough, we're going to be using these mobility scooters before you know it.
Yeah, okay. Okay, fine. I'm happy to do the mobility scooter. That's right. If you want that, I'll do that. Sometimes I use that at Walmart, and they got the double wides at Walmart, which are really, mm-hmm. you know, I don't yeah. they have really nice wide aisles at Walmart, yeah, unlike my local Jewel.
Be careful taking on the scooter community.
All right, I will.
We're going to be a part of it soon.
Thank you, John. That's true. Hey, a rather serious story. We have reports of a police officer who was shot in the hand. Is that right? In Chicago?
That is true on the West Side. Let me double check here something, because I've got just something that just came in. The officer struck in the arm.
Okay.
Transported to Stroger in a police vehicle. And we understand there may be another person, maybe shot somewhere nearby, possibly the offender being transported to Sinai. So the information is starting to creep in a little bit more now. But we do have a police officer.
Appears to be an exchange of gunfire with police.
On the west side.
Is what it appears to be at this moment as we're looking at that.
Yep.
All right. Well, we wish the best there, because that's, you know, we always talk about that, how difficult that is. The people who are, you know, running toward all the trouble and toward the gunfire, you know, have to do what they have to do. And it's, you know, the arm, obviously, it's not being covered by the vest, mm-hmm. right? Which, thank God, police now have an opportunity to get those. Just 980 of them were released last week. Right. To Chicago police officers by the Memorial Foundation. So,
you know, I started tracking all the shootings in the city on January 1st. And just to see what sorts of things we could learn. And it's been interesting. There have already starting to be some patterns that have emerged from age to locations, which I'm guessing we won't learn a lot about, because most of them are, in fact, are on the south and west sides. But a lot of the circumstances around these that surprise me are similar. It's people who report hearing gunshots and then feeling pain. Several of them are people sitting in vehicles often when someone approaches and shoots them. Others are standing on a sidewalk when someone approaches and shoots them. And a lot of them, the victims are uncooperative. So it's going to be interesting to see. And it was one day, actually, where I was, because I've been inputting all this data, I thought, oh my gosh, no one was shot today. This was back in January, and it was a big deal. It actually yeah. became a story on the news that day.
Oh, man. When it's the news that no one was shot in Chicago, that is a pretty indicting statement.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's bad. There's no question about it. But you just hit on something that's important in terms of law enforcement's frustration. I think the community writ large's frustration with this is victims are not willing to talk about who shot them. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, they know whether it is the individual specifically who shot them, or what group of people shot them, or who knows who could identify the shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just actually interviewed a professor from the University of Toronto who had spent 20 years here at the University of Chicago. And we talked a lot about neighborhood violence. He just wrote a book called America the Beautiful and Violent. And it was an enlightening conversation. We got into several of the reasons why. And a lot of it, he says, goes back to just these under-resourced communities. And that's a big reason for a lot of it. And the destruction of these neighborhoods, the disinvestment, the mass incarceration that's destroyed families, several reasons that I thought were real interesting. We talked a lot also about the solutions and possible solutions and the cost of all of this to all of us. And until we stop demonizing these neighborhoods and fund them and resource them, give them opportunity, economic development, jobs, hope, something they don't have now, it's going to be very difficult for this to change. It's, in his opinion, a man-made problem, and it's going to take a man-made solution.
Yeah. I don't disagree with any of that. It's very hard to get that past the public conscience, though, because you generally get pushback like, well, businesses leave those neighborhoods because people are doing the wrong thing. It often goes back to blaming the 15-year-old who is just doing what the 20-year-old told him to go do.
Right.
Right.
And that's a big part of it.
Right. And then the 10-year-old is watching the 15-year-old about to come up into that world because that's the business they understand. Right. And like in other neighborhoods in the suburbs of Chicago, you go to school, you go to high school, you may go to college, you may go to trade school, but you're going toward some part of the economy you're going to be a part of. And sometimes it just happens within your own community or your own neighborhood. You just know people who've gone, you know, whether it's to a dominant particular industry or business, whatever it is. That's not available in those neighborhoods. And that is true. Now, having said that, there has to be a breaking of the cycle, too.
Yes,
there has to be a family part. This is not, you can't just dump businesses into Englewood, for example, and say it's all going to get fixed. Englewood does have an incredible success story over the last 5 years. When they put the Whole Foods in Englewood,
63rd and Halsted.
Right. And they put that development in there at 63rd and Halstead. I was just by there the other day. What that has done for that part of Halstead, and what that has done for a couple blocks east and a couple blocks west and north and south, it's created a little bit of like a it has created an improvement.
Absolutely.
And there is and Englewood really is no longer at the very top of the charts of gun violence as it was. Now, that's not all because of just the Whole Foods, but there is development. There's development coming from the east to the west. It's crossing the tracks there, and then it's crossing the Dan Ryan there. Mm-hmm. And there is development that is coming along.
Right.
And that you're at 100% what you're pointing to, the professor who was at the University of Chicago, is totally right about it. There are opportunities to actually put businesses in and get things to turn around almost on a block by block basis. And that is true. But the investment is huge, and you can't do it without the other side of the equation being addressed. And that is trying to find ways to get to help families understand and give them the support they need to get out of the gang life.
Absolutely. And if given no other alternatives, they will turn to alternate economies, is what the professor said. And he also, I mean, there were so many interesting points he made. He talked about how we become desensitized to it all. And he said, you know, two people would be stabbed in Toronto and it was national news for days. You can have 50 people shot in a weekend in Chicago and it barely makes the news. His thing was, too, that so much attention is put on mass shootings, school shootings, when in fact those really only make up a small percentage of the homicides, when most of these happen in our underfunded neighborhoods.
Right.
And as a result, you know, people are going into these neighborhoods and they see, I asked him, what would a person coming from a well-funded community say if they spent a month in Englewood? And he said they would be appalled that there are people living like this in these United States.
Right. I mean, there's no question that industry helps, communities help. I mean, you see this. We look at this in the urban diametric here. We think about Chicago. We think about other major cities and primarily African-American or minority communities, whatever it happens to be, that are plagued by gun violence and as a result of lack of resource, right? That's the that's the argument. You're starting to see it, though. What happened out in smaller rural communities or ex-urban communities where all of a sudden the factory closed,
right,
or the main economy changed? What happened? Well, meth houses started to develop, right? Mm-hmm. You started to see violence. You started to see all kinds of issues happen in those communities as well. And it's just that it's an issue. It goes back to something that both Bill Clinton and Donald Trump knew. Not that, this. That it's about jobs. It's about maintaining an economy. It's about the jobs, stupid, right? I mean, you got to keep you got to keep jobs and economy moving. And other than, if you don't, you're going to get huge pathology.
Well, he talked a lot, too, about the psychological impact on these neighborhoods and how it impacts ultimately all of us. I mean, he said, and again, back to these mass shootings, he said these are communities that are not dealing with a single event of trauma. They're living in a state of trauma.
Right. That's an excellent point. Excellent point. When is that coming out? Do we know?
I'm not sure.
It's one of those things you can't speak about
because
it's a TV secret.
I probably shouldn't have said as much as I have.
Don't worry about it. I won't tell anybody.
Okay,
hey, Kevin, Lauren, don't tell anybody either. All right,
Mom's
Joe.
The word.
We will see you starting at 5 o'clock on WGN TV News.
Take care, Rob.
Thank you. There he is, Joe Dylan, principal anchor, WGN TV News. WGN Radio News coming your way in 2 minutes.
We must root out the purveyors of greed and corruption in both parties, whose presence infects the bloodstream of government. It's no longer enough to sit idle while under-the-table deals, extortion, or bribery persist. Protecting that culture or tolerating it is no longer acceptable. We must take urgent action to restore the public's trust in our government. That's why we need to pass real, lasting ethics reform this legislative session.
Oh, too late for that. Mark Maxwell is our man in Springfield. He works for Nexstar Media, and he's our insider. He's our guy that we need at all times in situations like this. It's a big, heavy burden, by the way, Mark. I just want to let you know that. The governor...
Okay.
The governor... is interesting because the governor is saying we're going to root out corruption. Now, if I am not mistaken, I'd like to go back and find this. We were not able to successfully find it yet because we didn't look hard enough, I don't think, yet. That's all on me. But I know that Rod Blagojevich said exactly that in a State of the State address in the 2000s. You know, we're rooting out corruption because it's all about this whole idea of government overspend is about you know, corruption and waste and mismanagement. If we just get rid of that, don't worry about it. We don't have to raise taxes, which sometimes is just because they're spending too much money. But what was the sense in the room when he said that? Are there a bunch of people going, yay, or, oh, no, you can't do that. I'm going to go to jail.
Well, Roe, the Republicans jumped out of their seats first, and I would say Democrats quickly joined them. One Republican afterward said, look, this was low-hanging fruit. A speech is a speech, and words are just words. Republicans were really glad and almost glib after the speech, saying, hey, the governor's on the record now. He says he wants to clean up and crack down on corruption, but now they want to see action. They want to see actual laws that make certain types of lobbying, other forms of government, actually illegal, something that could get you in trouble with law enforcement. They want to have more teeth, more punishment for bad acts. And so the governor put out some pretty precise language today. He said, for example, that he wants to see an end of the era where lawmakers can, you know, be a sitting elected official and then retire immediately and fall into this sweet gig working as a lobbyist for some outside interest that may have been wooing them while they were still in office in that revolving door, right? So the governor put down a flag today and said, that's got to stop. And there were some elected officials in the building who already have that career path charted out, and they're ready to go. And now they got a threat from the governor.
Interesting, because they have tried to do this at the federal level, right? And they've been fairly successfully. And now this is where I did not anticipate this was going to happen. At the municipal and county level here in the Chicago area, they have started to talk about laws that – enacting ordinances or asking Springfield for laws, which is part of what the county is asking for here, to really restrict how quickly one can move from a person inside the Capitol voting on bills to somebody outside the Capitol who has friends inside the Capitol who are voting on bills that he can offer trips and other sorts of services to in order to win their approval. Not just the pure goodness for the public of the piece of legislation that these people need. It's all about business. And that's true. I mean, that is, people don't just go. It's not like in third grade when you're in a history lesson or, some cartoon trying to sing you the realities of, people for truth, justice, and the American way go to Washington or they go to Springfield or, go to City Hall or whatever it is. And they just, they want to do the bidding of the people. They're often just doing the bidding of, whatever contractor they need to do the bidding of because they're going to get something out of it.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, you know, there's all of those questions. Some of this is about transparency, too, right? The new lobbyist laws that have been put into place already this year are requiring lobbyists themselves to disclose more about how much they make, who's paying them. I think conventional wisdom and a common solution to that revolving door is a cooling off period. Okay, you're an elected official, you want to still make money for your family, fine, but you can't lobby your friends and your former colleagues for a year or for 3 years or whatever that term should be. So, there's certainly a lot of political will and a lot of posturing right now, public proclamations about we want to have better behavior around here. I think a lot of people are watching the relationship between Governor Pritzker and Speaker Madigan, because he didn't just say illegal acts are bad. If you listen closely to that soundbite you played at the start here, the governor said it's not okay to sit idle or to protect or to tolerate this culture. Some people could reasonably say that was a bit of a mild rebuke of anyone,
mild.
Any legislative leader who's been around for a while here, who's allowed this culture to creep in.
I would make the argument that he's laying down a position he says he's going to take. I hope he holds that position, because it's easier said, like everything, easier said than done. He's going to have to get people, he's going to have to wrangle people inside of those systems. And he's going to have to get legislators and he's going to have to get senators to sit there and decide that they want to do what they want to do. When somebody sitting to the left or the right of them in the chamber, they know is doing the wrong thing. So it's very hard. I mean, it is very much. I've always looked at the Illinois General Assembly as a very large and vast criminal conspiracy. It always has been. And you know, maybe he can change it. Maybe he can. I hope he can. And I have an idea on the other side here of why he actually is the only guy so far who could. Mark Maxwell, our man in Springfield from Nexstar Media. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. Let's check in now with Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather. News coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I want to say that. All right. We were talking just a little bit ago with our man in Springfield, Mark Maxwell. He's our spy down there. We send him into places that no human would fear to tread in Springfield. Bars and restaurants and strip clubs. The kinds of places where you can find state legislators and senators.
They got strip clubs down there?
Oh, well. Well, I mean, is it the gentlemen's clubs? It's for gentlemen.
Right.
And there are places in Springfield. There are little hidden places in Springfield that only those in the power world know about. That there's a lot of hanging out in. And right on the square there, right on the Capitol Square, there's restaurants and things like that that are, you know, if you just, all the feds have to do is just put one guy at the bar per night and you just watch what happens. And I mean, I know of so many cases of the sorts of, you know, you hear about these from when people leave the legislature and they tell stories about what happened to them or what happened to their colleagues down there, of legislators, I mean, getting all kinds of things from lobbyists in Springfield, whether it's sex, trips, jobs for their kids, jobs on the way out, you know, whatever it happens to be. I mean, this is the thing that goes on, right? This is endemic. This is the centerpiece of the problem, is that when people go into politics, you find that even if their intent is perfect when they go in, like they're like, I want to represent my community and I want to go in and do the right thing. Even people who do that are often working up against the waves, the winds of the corrupt nature of what happens. I just want to keep this in Springfield because I understand it better than, you know, I don't understand other states' politics very well. But I do understand this. And I understand a little bit about Washington, and I know a hell of a lot about Chicago. And most of it I will write in a book after everybody else is dead, so I don't get dead too fast. But there is a system down there once you get in, you don't get primary positions on committees or any of the other things that the, whether it is the Senate president or the Speaker of the House, control all of it. They are the purveyors of all pleasure and pain for anybody who gets elected to any kind of an office down there. And then once they get into that office, they have to suck up to those leaders. And then the leaders, the intermediate leadership, the people that are kind of in the middle level of leadership down there, in order to get the kind of things that they want done. And, you know, out of every five bills in Springfield, probably two of them are in the public interest. And then three of them are in the interest of some other entity, whatever it happens to be. But it's giving priority. And it may be, you know, like maybe it's kind of in the public interest because it's a road project, let's say, that they're spending money on. Or it's, you know, some other infrastructure kind of thing that the state would be responsible for, or some sort of oversight the state would be responsible for. But, you know, it is often at the behest of a lobbyist working for a major corporation who says, my guys are better than my competing guys. And then you got another lobbyist who's working for a corporation who says, no, my guys are better than your guys. You got to take my bid, not your bid, and all that. And they don't necessarily take the lowest bid. They take the most qualified bid, and that's, I'm using that in air quotes. And sometimes the most qualified bid has the better hookers. That, honest to God, is how it goes in Springfield. And it has forever. And I dare anybody down in Springfield to tell me that's not how that goes. You could, but you would be lying if you did that. Because you know it. And I know you know it. I mean, there's stuff that happens in those bars down there that is just so obvious. So completely obvious.
Classic hookers.
Sometimes it's hookers. Sometimes it's not even hookers. Sometimes it's just people who are working in a firm that figure it's going to be better for them to be able to bring in this particular leader, this particular middle level leader or legislator or senator or whatever that's going to make the difference. I mean, I've seen that happen. And it's we could sit around and talk about all of the professional sexual dynamics that happen in the workplace now, Me Too and all the rest of that. But every once in a while, you get a relationship that benefits both parties for a short period of time. And those things happen in Springfield. And that is not, you know, it's not unusual. And the people who are down there for more than 5 minutes go, oh, my God, look at that. They can see it. They can see what's happening. The key to the problem here is that a legislator in Springfield makes, I think it's like $68,000 or something like that. You looked at that specific number up for me, Jeff. There's the senators and the legislators. They don't make the kind of money they would make where you'd wear a suit to work every day, right? The kind of things that they would, the kind of money they make is the money that is no longer really appropriate for their job. You got $67,800 a year, plus you get a per diem. Now, I don't know if the hooker's on the per diem or not. I'm not sure if you get a hooker per diem too, if it's just dinner. I don't know.
What's your hooker's benefit package look like?
Depends on which lobbying firm they're working for. All right. Now, this is ultimately the problem. Okay? This is ultimately the problem.
Now, Patty works. She's very good at what she does. She's as qualified as Michelle Obama, if not more qualified. So Michelle Obama's getting $65,000 a year for, you know, what was it? Treehouse Foods, Patty? What? Quinlan, what was it?
Treehouse Foods, what she was on. Treehouse.
Yeah, and she's making $300,000 over at the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
Where her husband's federal funds are going there. What?
Yeah, which, of course, went up as soon as he got elected Senate. And he was able to get federal funding to University of Chicago.
Okay. You might remember some of the sound of that. Those are the Blago tapes that the feds used in court to convict him. And it's all talking about how much everybody makes. Why? Because Blago, as it was pointed out in another one of these tapes, he was asking Patty, how much does a U.S. senator make? Because a U.S. senator was making, I think, somewhere around $5,000 more than the governor's salary was in Springfield. So he thought, well, that'll be an upgrade. That $5,000 a year, we could use that in the household. Right? And that was in part of him thinking about giving himself the Senate seat. So what you find here is if somebody is going to go down to Springfield, who otherwise has a business or some other kind of a career and education and wants to go work for $68,000 a year, they're either doing it because they have enough money to go do it and they want to do the right thing, or they're doing it because they don't quite have enough money and they know there's money to be made in this on the periphery of their job and the gray scale of their job. And that's the thing that has to be changed. And I know. I am not about the idea of government waste and all of that. And when politicians, you know, it's always a political thing when they vote for their own raises. And I think we should change the pay structure for all of these politicians in Illinois, whether it's for the, and it sounds counterintuitive, right? But I think if you have people, you have two classes of people who are going to run. You got people like Pritzker and Rauner who were billionaires who are like, okay, we don't need them. I'm going to give my money back. It doesn't matter. I'm going to try and go do the right thing. Pritzker and Rauner finding what those political headwinds look like. Pritzker's got a little bit of an advantage because he's got a democratically controlled Senate and House. The issue is, those legislators are always going to be up to no good if they think they're going to make more money, if they're going to double or triple their salaries and help their friends and their family by not necessarily doing the best work for the taxpayer of Illinois, but doing the best work for themselves personally. There's no way to do that unless you raise their income level. I'd double it immediately and then double the penalties for corruption. Go lobby the federal government to go double to make sure that there is truth in sentencing when it comes to guys doing the wrong thing.
And because, oh, Blacko's doing too much time.
He's not doing too much time. He's doing the exact right amount of time, because if he doesn't do that, if everybody stops and says, oh, no, this is terrible, I cannot believe that Blacko's going to have to spend this much time in jail, they don't understand the problem. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom's got your news coming up next. All right, it's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. I do not wish to be a desk pounder today. I did two times in the last hour. I was pounding the desk. People got a little upset with me because I suggested that we actually double. The governor had his State of the State address today, and I said, if you want to root out corruption, we double the salaries for legislators in Springfield. And then also double the penalties for corruption, twice the amount of time in jail. Guarantee they're going to get the Blacko deal, which was the hope there. And then a number of texters and callers were like, well, think about what that's going to do to the state budget. The total dollar amount spent to run the legislature is 0.07%. 0.07% of the state budget. If you made that 0.14, a little over a tenth of a percent of the budget, you would save yourself probably 10% of the budget to 20% of the budget in corruption cost. That's all I'm saying. I just ran the numbers during the break, just letting you know. All right. That's all I could say about that for today. This story, speaking of legislation, speaking of new rules, does not seem to make a lot of sense to me. There's a Senate bill that is trying to get passed down in Springfield that would make it illegal to receive live animals as carnival prizes. What? How are kids going to get their first tadpole or goldfish? Huh? Or, I don't know, baby cow? Do you get that? Like at the state fair, we should ask Orion this question. maybe there's an answer to this. I thought they were like giving away calves and stuff like that at the state fair to like kids. Take them home and grow them, yeah.
Look what I won. What?
We're going to need a bigger litter box.
Can we keep it?
The Illinois Humane Care for Animals Act already prohibits giving rabbits, ducklings, and chicks as carnival prizes, but this would expand to protect all animals. This isn't just a goldfish bill, Susie Glowiak-Hilton, a Democrat from Western Springs, says. Carnivals across the country give out other animals as prizes, specifically iguanas and other exotic reptiles. Well, listen, if it's an alligator, we have just solved the mystery.
Win the Humboldt Park alligator. Step right up, kids.
Chase the Snapper came right out of a carnival. And first of all, let's just stop and think about the quality of the carnival level in the state of Illinois to begin with. At least I can just speak to what it is like up here. You go to carnivals and sometimes it's a church carnival. Sometimes it's a little town is going to have a carnival.
Park District situation.
Park District situation, right? And you've, I mean, the greatest offense to humanity is not a goldfish being given away because you got a ping pong ball in the little goldfish container. The greatest offense to humanity is the fact that literally the Tilt-A-Whirl is being put to together by a guy who's got one arm, and the other arm, the one that he has, is filled with track marks. And he's literally using duct tape to connect one of the cars of the Tilt-A-Whirl to the arm.
The last time I went on a carnival ride, I was like, okay, that's the last time I'm ever going on a carnival ride. The thing's like creaking and shaking. The belt's not exactly all that secure. You feel like you're going to fall out.
You're in that thing where you stand against the wall, the centrifugal thing, and all of a sudden the floor drops away from you. If that thing doesn't keep that speed, it's nothing but 30 broken ankles right there.
It's being run by some generator in the back.
Look at the upside. At least the bill will keep you protected when you get a tapeworm from all the really terrible food that you're eating.
I don't know. Does it? It's
a live animal.
That's true. But is it is cotton candy? Well, all that spun stuff. You just go and it's like spun dough with sugar on it.
Hot dogs that have been sitting out for like 18 hours.
Do not eat protein-esque things at a carnival. I would just like to. I can't really speak to this issue of food poisoning right now, so I won't. Because otherwise, it's going to get very bad on the radio very quickly. But what I want to know, I want to tell the story of how a carnival animal changed my life. And then on the other side, your calls, 312-91-7200, and the thoughts of our people here. Should the state of Illinois protect goldfish by not allowing them to be given away as carnival prizes? We'll be back right after Lauren tells us about the traffic and the weather. Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. We're talking about an initiative in Springfield in which the Senate would like to pass a law that would keep all animals from being gifts at a carnival or prizes at a carnival. For example, right now, a lot of people are calling this the Goldfish Bill, and the person who was sponsoring this from Western Springs, Senator Glowiak Hilton, two words. She says this isn't just about goldfish. This is carnivals across the country give out animals as prizes, specifically iguanas and other exotic reptiles. We want to keep those from going out. Those like little like they're not really. I think Lauren will know the answer to this. They're not little mini alligators, but they look like mini alligators.
We're talking about like the geckos and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, like geckos. But there's also something smaller than a gecko that's
newt.
Yeah. Ew, a newt.
My kids had a newt.
Oh.
We had a couple newts.
Did they win them at carnivals?
No, I bought them like an idiot.
When you could have gone down to Joe Davies County and actually gone to their county fair and got one, you didn't realize you could have done that?
I went to the pet store and paid for it big time.
Idiot.
What does a newt go for these days?
Well, this was back in the day, so I don't remember, but they weren't cheap. And then you had to feed them and everything.
Right. And then they did live stuff, too, right?
And clean their cage.
Oh.
No, a newt eats dry stuff. I wasn't going the live feeding route.
Yeah. So, all right. As a kid, my parents didn't want me to have a dog. I grew up in an apartment, and they were like, we're not going to have a dog in an apartment. And I'm like, why not? Well, neither of them had dogs. That was their biggest issue. They thought a dog was going to be a big thing. The first thing I did when I became a fully formed adult was get a dog. Because I'm like, this is it. I am not putting up with this anti-canine kind of thing. And the dogs have been in my family and my kids' family forever. So the dog is the most important thing. I don't want dogs being given away. I get that part. I get bigger animals, you know, that are hard to take care of, that are likely then to be given up. Like, for example, already in Illinois, you know, you can't give a baby chicken. I guess it would be a chick, right? You cannot give a rabbit or a duckling or, you know, things that are eventually going to be incompatible with a house. But something that goes in a tank, I mean, what the hell's wrong with that? So at a carnival, I got a tadpole. This is a very tragic story. I hope you people are all kind of ready for what happened here. So I already had a turtle that my father claims to have found on a roadway down in Orland Park when he was out surveying real estate for something. I don't know what he was doing. He's out there surveying something or another, and he was driving, and he claimed to, and I didn't even know where, as a kid, I had no idea what he was talking about, because at that point, Orland Park was nothing but farms. And he brought this turtle back, and he said, "What would you like to name the turtle?" And the turtle had to live in my bathtub. I had my own bathroom. My sister was out of the house at that point, and so I had my own bathroom, and I was and I decided, if I'm going to keep this turtle, I don't have to use a bath. I'll go to the gas station down the street. I'll be fine. I don't need to worry about that. Put the turtle in the bathtub, and it lived there for years. Right? We had a bunch of rocks that it would crawl around on, and you'd just give it enough water, and then the thing would stink, and you'd get the water out, and you'd shower, you'd take the turtle out, it would run around the house. Or actually, it wouldn't even do that. To say that a turtle would run around a house is really an exaggeration. What the turtle would do is it would become a rock placed somewhere in the house. It was not a particularly friendly turtle. It was not a good friend. It was not a good companion. It wasn't affectionate in any way, shape, or form. And as a matter of fact, every time I got affectionate with it, I was throwing up for the next 48 hours. So that's a separate issue. So I kept this thing around. So then I'm at a carnival. Flash forward about a year and a half, 2 years. I'm at a carnival. And I win a tadpole. And I bring it home, and my dad says to me, "All right, well, you've already named the turtle Speedy," which was, you know, kind of a dumb name for a turtle. But I thought...
Ironic.
I was, even as like a six-year-old, I thought, I would like this to be funny. So I called him Speedy. And for the tadpole, I named him Dippy. I don't know. Again. I didn't know if it was ironic or cute. I wasn't sure in the entertainment spectrum what I was going for there, really, when I think back on it. So the whole idea of a tadpole, right? It's like a fish, and then eventually it starts to grow legs. And then next thing you know, it's a frog, right? In theory. So there I am. I got the turtle in the bathtub. I got a tank on the sink with Dippy in it. Dippy swimming around. I don't know, maybe a month. 6 weeks, whatever it is. And all of a sudden the legs start to come out. All of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, I'm about to get myself a frog. And then, I'm like, I've got a jungle at that point, is what I'm thinking. He stops swimming, and he stops growing. And it just is there. So, like, every day I walk in, he's kind of in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the water, sometimes floating at the top, sometimes sort of in the middle. And I'm like, looking at him, I'm like, well, he was at the top before, now he's at the bottom. So he's got to still be alive. And my dad was, you know, out, you know, doing some other business. My mother wanted nothing to do with any of this because she just figured that it was livestock in her house and didn't, you know, she wanted to just ignore that any of this was going on. So my dad was my caretaker with this, and he was, you know, gone and at a, you know, military kind of thing. So I'm sitting there, I'd say for 3 weeks, staring at this thing floating in the middle of the tank, just kind of. Just basically upright. I had friends who also would, you know, and I was asking everybody at school, "Do you think it's going to be okay?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, no problem. As long as it's not on its back floating at the top, you're fine." This is what confused me for 3 weeks. So eventually, my dad gets home, and I said, "Hey, I think there's something wrong with Dippy. I don't know where this is going to go." And he like picks up Dippy. Dippy's like rock hard, you know, dead as can be, deader than dead, like. You know, Netflix and the scary movies dead.
Had a good run.
Not really. So, and he flushes it down the toilet. Adios. And I'm like, oh, wait. Oh. Oh. Now, here's the problem. Problem is that I was heartbroken by this loss. I actually cared about that thing. I think if I can just bring this back to the legislation, I think the Illinois State Legislature is doing the wrong thing. Because why not? If you want a goldfish, I had goldfish too. They never really lasted that long. They're a pain to take care of, quite honestly. They, you know, people go, oh, it's so easy. But they just drop dead so easily.
I killed mine because I pet them.
See? See what I'm saying? Right.
I didn't know you couldn't.
Did you kill it like instantly when you pet it? I mean, was it like a hands-on
it wasn't
murder?
No, I wasn't like Medusa with my fingers touching the fish, but you know, it was
not a good. Not
it was
good.
Definitely easily connected to me petting the fish.
So the autopsy report of the fish does indicate human interaction.
That would be a
cause
necropsy,
of death.
Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Oh, see, there you go. There she goes again. Always correcting. All right. Anyway, I happen to stand fully with both feet, not in favor of this. I think this is good for the. This is the wrong thing for America, and I would just like to make sure that kids still have an opportunity to have the exact same heartache and break that I had staring at my dead tadpole half frog, tad frog or whatever it was, and then the loss of my turtle, which has already been well documented. Which I don't, you know, it's too sad to bring up. We actually almost burned down the apartment because of the turtle. Because we kept putting a light on the turtle to simulate sunlight. So we got a sun lamp. And I, as like a 9-year-old, put the wrong bulb in the sun lamp. And the next thing you know, the whole thing goes up in smoke. I was taking a bath in my other, my parents' bathroom. And I come back and there's smoke billowing out from underneath my bedroom door. And I had to go to my mom and go, hey, you know, I think we've got a problem, so we had to evacuate the apartment. She stayed up there, actually, which I thought was an amazing moment of bravery, but she only stayed up there because it was a snowy night in Chicago when the fire department came. She wanted to ask them to take their boots off before they went in to fight the fire. That is a 100% true story. She was eventually removed by a fire captain and the building superintendent so that they could get in. They did. They did track mud. I will acknowledge that actually happened. All right. So much for me reliving my childhood. I'm going to have nightmares tonight. We got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. Ro Khan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, before we go any further, there has been a story of a Chicago police officer who was shot on the west side today, shot in the arm. There are conflicting reports about whether this was actually police officers happening on the scene of two civilians shooting at each other, and then he was hit in the crossfire. It's a little unclear at this moment, or there was an exchange of gunfire. There is one person we do know who was a civilian who was shot in all of this. We don't at this point also know whether that person was shot by a police officer or by another citizen, if you will, that civilian that was, you know, crossing back and forth. So there are many conflicting reports. Vic Vaughn from the WGN newsroom has been covering this for us. And Vic, what can you tell us about this particular this moment right now with where the investigation stands?
Well, it's fluid. So and I say that because we just heard from interim police superintendent Charlie Beck. He's at Stroger Hospital where the officer's in stable condition. It appears he was shot in the hand. That's what the chief said. There were reports that it was the forearm, but either way, he's in stable conditioning and looks to be released after 24 hours. So that's the good news. We'll start with that. And that's straight from the doctor who is treating him at Stroger. So that's the good news. From what the superintendent told us just a minute ago from that presser was that the officer was undercover, in an undercover capacity at the time, witnessed a shooting in progress. So a man had shot another man, and the officer then engaged, approached this suspect. But he did it, again, he was undercover, so he did it in kind of a clandestine way. So he began to follow the suspect. Suspect got into a car. I don't have the specifics of the addresses, but what we know is that it was on the west side, West Garfield Park neighborhood, I believe. But he followed the suspect, and then at some point the suspect realized he was being followed. Again, this was an undercover officer, but that suspect opened fire on the officer, firing off several rounds. And
on the street or in a car? Was he being followed on foot or
not? Not a foot chase. It was
car to car.
I don't want to assume, but we know the chief said that the officer followed the suspect.
Okay.
The suspect was in a vehicle.
Okay, got
it. So I don't know if the
cop... We'll assume at some point there, though, there was a moment where... Do we know if the police officer was actually shot in a vehicle or was shot out, was on the street?
Don't know that.
Okay. But the most important thing here is that this police officer is in stable condition and is expected to be released from the hospital within a day or two.
Yes, sir.
Secondly, and this, I would imagine, is the other person shot in this, is that the shooter of the police officer, or is that the victim of the shooter in the earlier shooting incident? Do we know that?
From what the police chief said, he did not say that the officer shot anyone. So the officer did not shoot anyone.
Okay.
The officer witnessed a shooting in progress. And from what Channel 9, if we're going off Channel 9's reporting, is that that person who was shot has expired.
Right. Okay. So. All right. Right. And that person was taken to Mercy, I understand. And then this is the officer was taken to Cook County Hospital.
Correct. Okay.
Stroger.
Yes.
Okay.
No, right.
All right. Vic Vaughn, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Vic Vaughn in the WGN newsroom. All right. Well, we'll continue to watch that story as it develops throughout the day. Anytime a Chicago police officer is shot, that's a major development. So we will watch that. It does sound to me as though if it's a hand or forearm, you know, you stop and you think, well, at least it's probably not lethal. However, there are circumstances, and I've seen this throughout the years, police officers who get shot, you know, it takes sometimes months and years of recovery, and many times they can't return to their job because of that injury. They go to desk assignment, sometimes not even able to handle that. So depending on what the extent of their injuries. So anytime, you know, getting shot is never a good thing. And it's ironic because we were just talking about the difference in the 3 o'clock hour on this program. We were talking about West Garfield Park, and we were talking with Joe Donlan from WGN TV News, and he's doing a special on where people are being shot, and actually physically where they are when they're being shot. Are they, you know, on the street, in a car, in a building, whatever it happens to be? It's an interesting look at the patterns that emerge here in West Garfield Park. Is a part of that story, so we'll look forward to Joe's report when that comes out. All right, coming up on the program, we are going to be talking to our man at the Super Bowl. We have men and we have women all over this planet Earth that are our people that we go directly to. And Adam Hogue, our Bears insider, is our man at the Super Bowl. And actually, the Bears made a couple moves here and an announcement, which I don't think it's an announcement about Mitch Trubisky, which I do not believe is an excuse for what we saw last season for the entire team. But it might explain some stuff, because you remember Trubisky, after his injury, didn't really come back that hot, and then by the end of the season, his numbers were improving. The team actually played in the fourth quarter of the NFL regular season. The team actually played pretty well, right? Third quarter into the fourth quarter. So we will tell you what that is all about from Adam Hogue, who's live at the Super Bowl which is going to be held on Sunday in Miami. That's coming your way. But first, Lauren Lapka tells us what's happening on the roads and in the skies. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
All right. Before we get to our man at the Super Bowl, I want to play something for you. The police officer was shot in Chicago today. Charlie Beck, who's the interim police superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, was at Stroger Hospital where that police officer had been transported. And he gave a narrative of what happened in this shooting. This was an undercover Chicago police officer who was in a vehicle. He encountered two individuals on the street shooting at each other, two citizens shooting at each other. When one went down, the shooter got in a car and started to drive away. The undercover police officer followed this driver, who was in a pickup truck. The guy figured out he had been followed, gets out of the car, starts. The police officer gets out, and there was not an exchange of gunfire, but the Chicago police officer was shot in the wrist, according to Charlie Beck. He was being then assisting units who were on their way to deal with the whole situation, found the officer down with the gunshot wound, put him in a car, in a police car, and were taking him to Stroger Hospital. I want this part of the story is from Charlie Beck. Listen to this.
While en route to the hospital, the officer and the transporting unit observed the offender in the pickup truck. The officer is driving the transporting vehicle, asked the injured officer, who at this point had been shot, did he still want to go directly to the hospital or should they apprehend the offender? He elected that they should apprehend the offender. They followed the offender's vehicle, which shortly crashed into a stationary object. The offender fled on foot and was captured without shots being fired by Chicago Police Department.
How about that? How about, you know, you talk about the job of being a Chicago police officer, the job of being a police officer anywhere, but specifically, let's just talk about Chicago for the moment, because this is what happened here. Talk about, here's a guy who was shot being transported by other guys because they didn't want to wait for the ambulance. They figured they could get him to the hospital relatively quickly and without any, you know, further damage to him. And then while this guy is bleeding in the back of a police vehicle, imagine the pain. Imagine all of that that he's going through as a, you know, a bullet pierces his wrist. And they see the offender and they still go after the guy. I mean, it is an amazing, amazing story. And that guy should be on the street in about 3 hours once Kim Fox gets a hold of it. All right, now to our man at the Super Bowl. He's at Super Bowl Lviv, which is being held in Miami this week. And it features the Kansas City Chiefs, their return to the Super Bowl after 50 years. At least they've been in it before. There's a number of teams that haven't. And the San Francisco 49ers. And the unfortunate thing is that they both wear red jerseys. So red is going to be who's got the red jersey on and who's got the white jersey on? Do you know, Adam?
I believe it is the 49ers who will be wearing the white jerseys because they requested to wear the white on white, which was one of their special jerseys where they wear the white pants too. And the NFL, I believe, denied that. So it should be the Chiefs in their red home uniforms and the 49ers wearing white.
You know, if I were in the Super Bowl, I would not do specialty uniforms. I would do your standard home or away because you want that video, you know, of them in the Super Bowl, especially if they win, to be in a really recognizable uniform. I don't understand why you want to do specialty. I wish they were consulting me on that.
That's what the NFL was thinking. Yeah, I think that's what the NFL was thinking in denying that request. But I have to say, the 49ers in the white-on-white uniforms did look pretty cool.
Yeah, well, whatever. All right. they look like a hygiene product to me, but that's a separate issue. All right, let us talk about the Bears for a second here, because the Bears made some news, hoping that nobody noticed. Mitchell Trubisky had surgery in the offseason.
Yeah, this was more of a confirmation. I asked Ryan Pace this question at the press conference at the end of the season, and he left the door open to that happening. He said we're still evaluating that. And usually when a GM or coach says that at the end of the year, it means that the player is probably going to have surgery. Now, it is his non-throwing shoulder. And my understanding is it wasn't a major procedure, but it was something that did have to get done. The specific timetable, do not know for sure. I'm guessing that somewhere in the early in the offseason program, though, Mitch will be able to probably resume throwing. So I don't think this is something that's going to affect him too much next season, which is good news.
Adam, they also go out and get Trey Roberson. First of all, fear the bird, Illinois State's finest, played quarterback at ISU. He was considered the top free agent out of the Canadian Football League. Now he's switched to defensive back. What do you make of this signing? Do you think he even makes the 53-man roster? And what do you think it means moving forward in terms of personnel?
Well, the indications here that this is a signing that we should take seriously and not just some random guy coming in from the Canadian Football League is that this was, I believe, the richest contract that anybody's getting coming out of the CFL, and the fact that it sounds like half the league wanted him. So there is a history of players that come out of the CFL and end up having substantial NFL careers after that. Sometimes they just need to develop. And in Trey Roberson's case, I know, Kevin, you remember, but he was a really talented quarterback, played at IU, went to Illinois State, and then sort of just disappeared because when he got to the NFL, first of all, he wasn't really given much of a chance, but he lands with the Vikings. He didn't really have a position. And so I think he had to go to a different league and kind of really develop as a corner. And this is a position of need for the Bears. So it is an advantage that they're able to address this through free agency well before the actual NFL free agency period opens in March.
Well, I think it's very interesting because there are not a ton of guys are coming out of the CFL to the NFL, but the But when they do, I mean, they generally, you know, they've had professional experience and the field, especially for a corner. A job of a cornerback in the CFL, in the Canadian Football League, is more complicated in a lot of ways because of the width of the field. I mean, the at least the athletic piece of it, you have to really be good because it's there's a whole lot of room that that and rules that are very pro offense for the CFL.
Yeah, that's true, and I'm not going to pretend to claim that I've watched a ton of Canadian games, but I do know that the game is more wide open there. The field is bigger. Those are all accurate things, and you have more space to cover. So, look, there's questions here. I think that Prince Amukamara, at a minimum, is going to have to take a big pay cut to play with the Bears or to continue to play with the Bears, or he'll just be let go and go somewhere else. And I've actually looked at some of the trade candidates. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if you were to really want to trade for a tight end or something like that, Kyle Fuller is actually somebody that comes to mind. It's somebody that could get you a big haul in return, and you could probably live without because the rest of the defense is so good. But if you're going to make moves like that, you have to have replacements. So clearly the Bears have made cornerback a spot where they feel like they need to upgrade this offseason.
Anything noteworthy from down there, Adam? Obviously some Chicago ties with Garoppolo being from here, the Matt Nagy coming from the Andy Reid coaching tree. Anything noteworthy today?
Down in Miami for the Super Bowl, Super Bowl love?
Yeah, that's you know, the biggest thing today is actually related specifically to the Bears and Kyle Long, because I had a chance to talk to him really for the first time since he's really disappeared in the middle of the season, because and I can now explain a little bit more about what happened, because it was a little mysterious that he finished that game in London, played that entire game. They had a bye week, and after the bye week, the Bears just put him on injured reserve, and he wasn't in the building the rest of the year. That was kind of what was weird. And in the end, Kyle Long decided to retire. Well, essentially what happened was Kyle tore his groin, which affected his hip flexor, back in week two, and tried to play through it through about 3.5 games. And what was great about what he talked to me about today, it was a very honest assessment in himself saying, I lost all my power, and at a certain point, you just have to say, do I like the guy that I'm showing on film, and does Mitch Trubisky trust me? So he pretty much said he realized on the flight home, as he was sitting next to Matt Nagy, that changes were going to be made. I don't necessarily think that all he thought at that point it would be his last NFL game ever, but that's how it turned out.
Adam Hogue from Super Bowl Love. We'll talk to him again tomorrow. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. He's our Bears insider, our man in Miami. News in the Top 5 of 5 next.
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Now, this is a very special Top 5 at 5 because we have 5 minutes to get through this before Dave Ennett takes over for the big Northwestern Michigan State game, the 100 millionth time that those two teams have played. It's some sort of record. So, this is the one-year anniversary of the Jussie Smollett incident. So we're going to play the top five moments from the Jussie Smollett saga of 1 year ago. So checking in at
number five.
You'd think this would be easier than it is. 1 year ago tonight, wind chill was 55 degrees below zero. Jussie Smollett going out for a tuna sandwich, which I no longer suggest one do, says he was encountered by two white males wearing a MAGA hats, attacking him, pouring bleach on him, and putting a noose around his neck. A friend who was with him made the initial 911 call.
I just need a police to come by. I worked with an artist. I don't really want to say his name, but he went to Subway. He was walking by, and some guys, I don't know, they jumped him or something like that.
Does your friend need an ambulance?
I just think he's startled. What's really weird, ma'am, just because I'm scared and I don't know what it is, they put a noose around his neck.
They had to give him the news because they were the ones who bought it at the hardware store. I don't want to comment until we're all done here. So a week after the attacks, Millett was set to perform a show in L.A. in the middle of the act. He wanted to clear up a few of what he said were the inaccuracies about him.
I was bruised, but my ribs were not cracked. Both my doctors in L.A. and Chicago cleared me to perform, but said to take care, obviously. And above all, I fought the f*** back. I'm the gay Tupac.
And even though there were some discrepancies about the story, the encounter, his fans stuck with him no matter what.
He's definitely being a man of honor, and that means a lot in a world where people are so quick to call you a liar.
I absolutely agree. I feel like the fact that he was able to go through something this horrible and traumatic, the fact that he still found the strength in himself to come and show love to his fans, I think that says a lot about who Jussie Smollett is.
And then the police on February 13th arrested the Ocendero brothers.
We took them into custody. We read them their rights, and they both initially asked for an attorney. Their attorney showed up. She came to us after speaking with these two people of interest. She said that something smelled fishy. She did not think that they were the offenders, as were reported.
So then the very next day, Smollett went on Good Morning America to tell his side of the story.
I'm pissed off. What is it that has you so angry?
You know, at first it was a thing of like, listen, if I tell the truth, then that's it, because it's the truth. Then it became a thing of like, oh, how can you doubt that? Like, how do you not believe that? It's the truth.
I know this is more than five, but I'm just going to go through this. Then, 2 days later, Superintendent Eddie Johnson announced that there was a shift in the investigation, and now Smollett was the subject.
Jussie Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career. I'm left hanging my head and asking why. Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations?
Then, on March 8th, Cook County Grand Jury indicted Smollett, 16 felonies, but somehow on March 26th, 8 days later, all charges against him were dropped and his record was wiped clean.
I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I have been accused of.
Rahm Emanuel lost his poop.
He did this all in the name of self-promotion. And he used the laws of the hate crime legislation that all of us collectively over years have put on the books to stand up to be the values that embody what we believe in. This is a whitewash of justice.
So why did Kim Fox drop the charges?
Do you think Jussie Smollett is innocent?
You know, I think that the charges that were filed, and again, I was recused at the time of the charges, were appropriate. I believe that the outcome, him having to forfeit the $10,000, having to do community service based on the allegations, and again, the class 4 felony and no background, are an outcome that we could expect with this type of case.
Okay.